podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, Rams fans. Welcome to Steve Bloomer's Washing, your independent Derby County fans podcast. I am Richard Kutcher, and the League One promotion race has tightened up again, with only one of the top four winning at the weekend as Derby went down 2-1 at Oakwell, and in the process opened the door for Barnsley to make a late dash for the top two. There are just 12 games to go for the Rams and we remain in second, but it is truly squeaky bum time, and another loss to a promotion rival raises more questions about our prospects for the running. Joining me this Sunday morning is Tom Martin. Tom, how are you doing this crisp late winter morning?
Very well, thank you, Kutcher. Got up nice and early with my little boy and was thoroughly enjoying Crawley en route, compiling some good runs for England. However, since breakfast, it's gone slightly downhill and everything is stagnated. But apart from that, I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, we were considering kind of building this podcast recording around maybe England's innings, but it's not great watching right now. So I think we'll put that aside. Anton, welcome back onto the pod.
Yeah, cheers, Gutch. Definitely starting to get those end of season nerves and tension now. It feels very much like we're well and truly in the running phase of the season, aren't we?
Yeah, it does. Every point, every win, every loss seems to matter double, and it is just so tight at the top, which we'll come on to. So, despite a poor first half display, I thought Derby did take the lead on Saturday. Sonny Bradley getting on the end of consecutive corners to eventually get one over the line for his first goal in a Rams shirt. Incredible celebration scenes in that packed away end, as you'd expect. And yeah, maybe misplaced optimism, but I was kind of hoping that we'd kick on from there, having kind of got the lead against a run of play. But as we've seen so often this season, Derby get that lead, they don't kick on, they hand back any kind of momentum they may have had, and Barnsley equalised 15 minutes later through Adam Phillips's decent half volley, when he seemed to have far too much time and space on the edge of the box to pick his spot. Despite continued sloppiness on the ball, I thought Derby did improve second half, but the tempo remained high throughout that whole game, and it was the Tykes who got the winner. Phillips again, the man who is unmarked, this time from a corner to head home quite neatly. Anton, as I touched on just there, it was a really high tempo game. I think one of the possibly most high tempo games I've seen Derby play this season. Probably the Peterborough game at home was kind of similar, but obviously that game had much more quality. Not a lot of control from either side or quality, to be honest. But I did think it was entertaining, not that that's any kind of consolation. So, Anton, what went wrong or what did you think was missing from Derby's performance yesterday to secure the win or even a point?
Yeah, it was definitely frantic. It felt a bit like a playoff semi-final game in a way, didn't it? Because the atmosphere sounded incredible. We obviously weren't there, but we took 5,000 fans down there. They sounded incredible. The home fans played their part as well. And there was that kind of nervousness and kind of chaotic nature on the ball from both sides, really, that made it quite entertaining, but also quite difficult to watch at times. I think in terms of the way Derby set up, it was quite similar to what we've seen throughout the season away from home, which has actually served us pretty well throughout the season. It was very similar to the 1-0 away victory at Charlton and various others as well. We got that goal and we looked to just almost soak up a lot of pressure. And we defended pretty well at times, but there were just a couple of mistakes which crept in. But I think the main difference in our performance yesterday was that the attacking players just simply didn't turn up. There was so many loose passes, poor decision-making on the ball. Yes, the lack of striker didn't help because we didn't have that focal point to just hold up play and just calm things down a little bit. But the amount of times we just gave it away very cheaply, and I wouldn't single out any one player for this. It was just a collective, just poor performance. So, I mean, hopefully you can just chalk that one down to a bit of a one-off, because I think mentality wise it was fine. They were they seemed well up for it. There was kind of good levels of energy and passion. It was just a lack of quality at times let us down going forward.
Yeah, on that sloppiness, I think, yeah, I don't want to, we'll talk about a few individuals later, and I think you're right, but it was kind of a team-wide problem. I don't think anyone was particularly better than others in terms of not being so sloppy. I think there's a couple of examples of, like, of us even doing good things and then it falling apart because of sloppiness. I think there's a run, I think it was second half, Kane Wilson made an absolutely incredible run. Maybe it was first half, actually. Really great run, and then just kind of kicked out of play.
Yeah, I remember that. He did that a few times, actually. It wasn't his best game yesterday, up until the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, I was interested about Kane, because the last 10, 15 minutes, Anton, he had the beating of that fullback every single time. He was literally walking around him, wasn't he? He was beating him so easily. It's like, where was that the rest of the game?
Yeah, exactly. But then even when he did that, it was just... bit of lack, poor decision making at the end. He either took too long to get it in or just passed it out in some cases. But it's a shame we didn't see that for the rest of the game. We've had that a few times this season, really, where we've looked poor until we've gone behind and then suddenly we've kind of kicked into gear. It's probably a nature of playing away from home, right? You want to keep it fairly tight up until you're losing, and then you can kick on. So it's a difficult one. I'd like us to be a little bit more adventurous away from home, but at the same time, you can't really argue with our away record. I think we're still second in the table on away form, so it may not be the prettiest, but at times it's fairly effective.
I think it's the nature of wanting to be effective. More on the front foot and more like in control of things, both at home and away. We seem to sort of like, if we score early, we then seem to just sort of like sit back and set the pressure up, which does work sometimes, but it always leaves you open to a moment of brilliance, which is what happened when I think it was Adam Phillips scored the equaliser. It is a great strike, and it's one of those that the same thing could happen 10 more times and he blazes it over the crossbar, but this time he puts it into the back of the net. And it's like Derby just seem to, yeah, as you say, like we go and we keep it tight, and then we might nick a goal, and then sometimes we hold on, like we did, say, for example, against Charlton, without necessarily looking like adding a second. And sometimes we don't. And then when the team does equalise, we then look, there's only one team that's going to go and score the winner. And unfortunately, that's been symptomatic of the season, I would say. Despite the fact we're second, it's the same old problems that we're talking about. And I feel like we're repeating ourselves again and again. If we go back to the Peterborough game, for example, we score within, the first 30 seconds or so. And then we just don't really look like necessarily adding to that until Peterborough equalise. And then we kick back into gear again. But as soon as Peterborough scored to make it 2-2 that day, there was only going to be one team that was going to go on and nick that winner. And it definitely wasn't Derby. And that, unfortunately, is what's going to cost us at the end of the season, unless we can start to change that.
Tom, you mentioned obviously the goals. So let's actually talk about them in some more detail. And I remember back in the early days of Steve Bloom as Washington, you and I would do quite a lot of kind of deep dive analysis of our defensive failings. And to be honest, there hasn't been too many opportunities to do that this season, because Derby's defensive record has been very good, one of the best in the league. And yesterday we had three very capable centre backs on the pitch. And on that first goal, you're right, it's a really good finish, emphatic finish from Adam Phillips, 20 yards out. But at the same time, he did seem like he had an absolute age to pick his spot. And there were definitely, I think Anton raised it on the Discord and a few others, there was, you know, question marks over the midfield and where they were. I mean, in the lead up to that goal, Ebo Adams kind of loses out a 50-50, tries to make a tackle, just misses out down that left-hand channel. So he's out there, he's kind of accounted for. You see Harahan busting a gut to get back, and he drops straight into that defensive line on the right-hand side of the defence. And then you suddenly got a situation where Elder, Cashin, Nelson, Bradley, and I imagine probably Wilson, but I think he's probably out of shot, are all kind of like almost like a back six. And that just leaves so much space when the ball does fall to Phillips. And it's Elder and Bradley, they don't look at each other, but they both hesitate to think, should we go and close it down? And I think that's what gives Phillips just that extra half a second, extra yard or two to kind of take his time, pick a spot and strike it. Is that how you saw it, Tom? Could it have been avoided? Because I think maybe Elder hesitates because there's a man to his left, so he doesn't want to leave that man open to his left. But I think Bradley probably does need to get out quicker.
I don't think it should be Bradley that should be closing that down. That should be a midfielder on the edge of the box winning that second ball. Like, quite simply, I don't know what Harahan's doing back in there. He's next to Bradley on the other side of the Barnsley forward. And actually, Bradley's well capable of marshalling him, and I think Howen should be out the box and not inside the box. There was no need for him. He's not following a man or anything from what I could see on that replay. I was trying to work out where Adams was. So if he lost that tackle out in the wide area, that's kind of where he was. And therefore, perhaps Howen should have been out, or maybe one of Bird or Sibley should have been dropping into the pocket, because we clearly were a bit sort of done over in terms of the amount of players that were coming into the box and around the edge. But there was way too much time and space. And if I'm going to be really harsh, Cashin's head is not good enough. He's under no pressure. He looks like he's stretching a little bit, but the ball goes up in the air. It doesn't go any distance. He's about 12 yards out when he makes contact with that ball, and it goes to about 20 yards out. If you're going to get rid of that, it needs to go wider at that sort of depth, or it needs to go further out, and it does neither. So for me, Cashin needs to head that ball into a better area. And secondly, I think Howerhan or someone else needs to be on the edge of that box, but I'm looking at Howerhan for that.
I think that's harsh on Cashin, to be honest. He's got a pretty good contact on it, and he defended it well. As long as you've got men in and around the edge of the box, then that's normally dealt with.
I think it goes up rather than going out. Yeah, but it doesn't get any distance, and it doesn't go wide enough. So if he's going to head it up because he's stretching, it needs to go wider. And if it needs to go for a corner, it needs to go for a corner. He puts the ball straight back into the middle of the goal on the edge of the box. And like, yes, there's no one there, but it's not good enough. It's not a good enough bit of defending for me.
Fine, but the ball's whipped in. Get good contact on it, get it out of the box, and then deal with it from there. That's my view on that. On the midfielders, Kutch is right. Ebu Adams, who lost the ball originally, actually took up a pretty good position. He tracked it out wide. Howerhan doesn't need to drop into that back line. You've got three centre-backs on the pitch. Just pull out and fill that space. And I think Bird also gets caught ball-watching a little bit. You see him tracking back, and he just kind of trots over to the wide area where we've already got Wilson and Ebu Adams and maybe even one other out there. If he drops in, yes, he might not have time to get back, but then you've got Bird and Howerhan covering that edge of the box. And it's going to take an incredible strike from there, but the more time you give someone to set themselves and get in the position to shoot from 20, 25 yards, it increases the odds massively. So you've just got to prevent that any way you can.
I think you're right, Tom. I think Howerhan probably is partly at fault because he races back into the wrong part of the defensive line. However, I thought the whole point of a back three is there should be a spare centre-back that can do things like closing down on the edge of the box and race out to close down there. And that's why I just thought, and maybe it's harsh on Bradley because it is maybe only half a second hesitation and maybe it wouldn't have made a difference. But for me, it felt like he was the obvious man in the moment. Yes, Howerhan is out of position, but in the moment, in the situation he found himself in, could he have got out there a bit quicker?
I've just gone back to have a look at the highlight of it and try and find the goal. At the point where Phillips takes the ball down, there are seven, maybe eight, if you include, I think it's Bird on the Derby right-hand side, who's about level with Phillips. He's nowhere near the player to intercept it. But there are definitely seven Derby players behind the ball between Phillips and the goal. There are only two Barnsley players in the box and one just on the edge. So three players in front of Phillips. So you're basically looking at 7v3 there. Like, Howerhan drops back in. I've looked at it again. He's got no reason to be in there because it's Cashin and Bradley against the one centre forward as the ball comes into the box and Howerhan drops in. If he stays on the edge of the box and holds his position, then I think Derby would have been absolutely fine. And I still don't think it's a good enough header on that thing. But then maybe I'm being harsh on Cashin there. He's a great defender, don't get me wrong. And I just think he could do a bit better.
I thought a few times yesterday he did have a few poor clearances yesterday, to be honest. A few interesting headers. But I think that was all of them. I think it was just a lot of sloppiness. Right, we spent more time on that one goal than I thought we would. Regarding the corner, Tom, I think that's a bit more straightforward, right? Just very, very sloppy. Adam Phillips gets completely clear. I think he's got about 3 yards of space around him when he heads that ball. Yeah, it's a good header, again, angled, you know, going back the other way. It's a good header, but uncharacteristically sloppy set-piece defending from Derby.
Yeah, I think so. It looks like Cashin, I think, actually jumps higher than him, it seems, but he just seems to not quite get to the pitch of the ball. And then Phillips is a good header, isn't it? So you've got to give him credit for that. He scored two good goals. It's frustrating because he's not the biggest of lads, but he's managed to beat Cashin, who's generally pretty good in the air at the near post. And yeah, it's a well-worked set-piece routine. But looking back on the replay on that one as well, Cashin does jump higher than him. It just he doesn't get to the ball and therefore flicks it in. No chance of Wildsmith on that one. So yeah, I don't really think there's too much you can do about that one unless you win that first ball, and we didn't then in that occasion.
So we asked you, our listeners, for what you made of Derby's 2-1 defeat at Barnsley in our usual five-word reviews. And as ever, you gave us plenty of responses, a mixed bag as ever, some optimistic, some pessimistic, some angry, some quite chilled. Chris Hill says now a four-horse race. We'll come on to that a bit later. Charlie, most unconvincing promotion campaign ever? Question mark. Classic Only Child, one of our patrons, striker absence means playoffs loom. Sunil says 8 wins from 12 enough? Question mark. Norway Mark, at least we're still second. What else we got? Tom Newton, needed not to lose it. And a surprising one here, well, surprising one for me anyway, James Laurie says get Vickers back in net. Not sure Wildsmith was at fault for the goals, but as we'll come on to, didn't have great distribution yesterday. Dave Lister, not enough quality when it matters or when matters. And James Atkin, worn ball isn't promotion winning. Well, we are still in the top two, James, and I take your point, but we are still top two. We have got two more big games against our direct promotion rivals to come. Obviously, two of 12 matches, so they're not the most important, but I think they're pretty important. Bolton at home on the 16th of March and Portsmouth away on Easter Monday. Losing yesterday, Anton, I think maybe raises more questions about our ability to win those crunch matches. And there must be a concern that that is what could ultimately cost us or be the difference of getting top two or not. Do you see that as a specific problem that we have, or are you still confident that we are capable of picking up points when those two potentially season-defining matches come around?
I don't see it as big a problem as it maybe has been in more recent seasons. I don't think yesterday's defeat was necessarily down to mentality or the way that the team was set up. It was just sloppiness on the ball and a lot of players not turning up, which you can't really account for in any kind of preparation for the game. So I don't think it was a mentality thing. I actually went back to look through all of our results this season against the top eight. I extended it to, because although you normally look at the top six in these kind of things, I think you can easily include Stevenage and Blackpool in the quotes big games this season. And actually our record's pretty balanced. Against Barnsley, we won one, lost one. Against Peterborough, 1-1, lost one. Oxford, 1-1, lost one. Stevenage, 1-1, lost one. And then with Blackpool, Bolton and Pompey, we still obviously have the return fixtures to play. But we beat Blackpool, we drew against Pompey, we lost against Bolton. So quite a lot of mixed results there. And actually looking at the teams currently occupying the playoff spots, if it does get to that point, of those we've played two legs against, we would have beaten Barnsley over two legs, 4-2. We would have beaten Peterborough over two legs, 6-5. And we would have drawn 4-4 against Oxford. Some absolute classic.
Great playoff ties, those.
Some classic ones in there. So I mean, it fills you with a little bit more confidence. So over the course of those 11 games, 15 points, 5 wins, 1 draw, 5 defeats. What struck me most, actually, was the number of goals in those games. 21 goals for, 18 goals against. So averaging kind of almost two goals a game scoring, and not far shy of that conceding. So some interesting stats there. I don't think that necessarily points to the fact that we can't play against those big teams. Yes, there's room for improvement, but I think we're always in those games. I think we've scored in every single game against the top eight as well, which is definitely a positive.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Anton. And yeah, definitely gives me more optimism. So if that is a pretty consistent a record as well in terms of kind of win one, lose one against each of those. And if that was to follow out, that means we're going to beat Bolton and we're going to draw against Pompey, which I think we'd take that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, definitely.
So let's see, even if we stay par for the course on that performance against our kind of top eight rivals, then that feels like what could be a good outcome. Tom, obviously, how do you feel about that? Do you think it is a mentality problem? Is it a tactical problem? Or is it just, you know what, these are teams which are similar ability to ours, and so ultimately it's going to be kind of win one, lose one against these guys?
I think it's a mix of the third and second point there. Really, I agree with Anton. I don't think mentality is wrong. You can see how up for it the Derby players have been, especially in recent weeks. But like the celebration and being sort of putting big tackles in. I don't think I can criticise the effort. It's maybe the application that's gone wrong. In terms of like the quality of the teams, yeah, like whenever you read on social media after like one of the games, like Portsmouth fans yesterday were really frustrated. Bolton fans obviously losing to Blackpool, a bit of a local derby there, and frustrated that they've not come away with something, and they've been in a good run. Barnsley themselves have only lost once in 15 games. So teams will go through different bits of form over the season, and I think no one's quite good enough to run away with it. But there's a massive gap between the top teams and the bottom teams in this division. There's some real dross, but there's also some like relatively mediocre, decent stuff. And I would put Derby in that bracket where all Derby fans seem to be quite frustrated with how we are, but we're second in the league, which is incredible. Scoring just about 2 points a game, which is pretty much promotion form, right? We're on course for 90 points in a season, which I believe would be a record point haul for Derby. And then there's still people who are disgruntled. And that kind of includes myself, even from the comments on this pod, right? It's not quite been as good as it could have been, is the way that I kind of feel about it. I'm still not sure about the three at the back and a 5-3-2. I think all the back three are playing, and I've given Cashin a bit of a go today, but I think all the back three are good players and have also been playing quite well. Bradley's been in his best form in a Derby shirt most recently, and Cashin and Nelson have been good together. I think it comes from the symptom of the fact that we don't have him up front, so we can't play a 4-3-1-2 or 4-1-3-2 or something like that. There's not enough confidence in Barkhuizen and Sibley to consistently put in performances game after game. And as a result, we're like, right, okay, let's play the system that Warne prefers. But I don't think it works for us. And I think we end up looking a bit flat and a bit vulnerable. And I don't think the players necessarily know how to do it. So for me, it's a mix of that second and third point you make.
Yeah, I thought we'll have a little bit of a chat in depth about the kind of 3-5-2 and the performance of the Sonny Bradley. And I was going to make the point later that it is ironic that we've kind of gone to a 3-5-2 as part of the solution to losing James Collins when we now have zero strikers, but we're trying to play two. Anyway, more about that in the second half. And don't forget, you can support SBW on Patreon. You'll get bonus episodes, exclusive competitions, and you can join our private Discord community. And all patrons get a discount on our range of SBW Derby County beer mats. So simply head over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing and join for as little as £3 per month to claim all of those great benefits.
Martin, low, and again, delivers with his weaker foot, Patterson, Martin! Out of the wilderness, onto the score sheet, Chris Martin may well have salvaged Derby County, the most unlikely of points here.
Hi, Derby County fans. I'm Branko Struper.
Hi, I'm Paolo Wanchop.
Hi, I'm Mart Poom.
And you are listening to Steve Bloomers Washing.
So obviously yesterday was a real blow to our run-in, but you know, not deadly. Because I think it's important to note, I think, that Bolton did get absolutely humped 4-1 and had a man sent off away at Blackpool. Imagine their meltdown this morning. It's a little bit more extreme than ours. While Pompey did drop points at the Valley, having gone on a good winning run. So the big beneficiary of the weekend, of course, was Barnsley themselves, who have made up ground on us and the other two above them to make this definitely, I think, is obviously a contradiction in terms, but definitely a four-horse race again, taking the place of Peterborough, who were themselves amongst the most fancied just last month. So I guess it shows that there is plenty of twists and turns to come. And while Portsmouth are certainly the best place, it really is all to play for if someone, hopefully Derby, can just string together, you know, one more kind of 5 or 6 game winning streak. I think that could be the difference. Tom, our next 4 games look like a great chance to get on such a run, although we've said that previously this season. We've got Charlton, Port Vale and Reading at home with a trip to Bristol Rovers in there as well. Surely this is the time, if we're going to really prove our credentials, nail down that top 2 spot, we need to be looking at 10, if not 12 points there to cash in, stay in that second spot and go into the Bolton game on a really good run.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think 10 to 12 points would be the 10 should be the minimum we should be aiming for realistically. But you know that football doesn't necessarily work like that. Charlton have obviously got a new manager in and they've got a couple of good points in recent games, even though they haven't won for 18, I think it is now. And when, Anton, you remember, we spoke about it with my friend Padge, who's a Charlton fan, on the way to the Valley, and he said that... I think both of us said that it'd be typical Derby to lose against Charlton, as they hadn't won, I think, for 14 or 15 at that point. And you could just see that kind of thing happening, Charlton coming to Bride Park and turning us over. But if we do get that result, and I think we've got Port Vale as well, and then Bristol Rovers, I think, are inconsistent. I think they were losing to Carlisle, who were rock bottom, and then turned it around late on. If we can get some results against those three teams, pick up 7 to 9 points out of those three games, I think I'll be pretty happy. Add another three onto there, and then we go into Bolton on good form and hopefully still in second place with them to come and attack us, because the pressure's on them. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of twists and turns in the next couple of months.
Charlton picked up a good point at the weekend, didn't they? And Reading are certainly much improved in recent times as well. So I don't think there are necessarily any particularly easy games at this time in the season. But I did have a look at the run-ins of the top sides between now and the end of the season. Soccer Stats do a really good bit of analysis of the teams that everyone's playing in the run-in, and look at the points per game of the opposition, both home and away. So it kind of weights it based on whether you're playing the opposition home or away. Now, Derby's run-in of the teams that we're playing at home between now and the end of the season, those opponents average 1 point per game exactly in their away matches. And the teams that we're playing away have accumulated 1.61 points per game at home. I know those numbers might not mean that much just in isolation, but I looked at Pompey, Bolton and the other contenders. Portsmouth's numbers are much higher than that. So the teams that they're playing at home average 1.43 points per game away from home. And the points per game of the teams that they're playing away is 1.77. So they, on paper, have a much tougher run in. Bolton's is higher both for their home games and away games. Barnsley and Peterborough is quite similar to Derby's run in. So I think that there are still twists and turns. I don't think you can fully discard Peterborough from this, to be honest, because I know they've been on a bad run. They've got the quality to put together a bit of a run, especially if teams around them continue to falter. So there are twists and turns. I think we've got to put together that run. I think the next couple of weeks are going to be challenging for not just the games that we're playing, but because of the striker situation, which we'll come on to a little bit later. But we've just got to forget about what people are doing around us and just try and continue to get on those winning runs and continue to pick up points.
Yeah, that's really good. Again, great analysis, Anton, and great data. People keep assuming it's going to be 90 points to get top two. I just don't see it. I think it might be 88, you know, to get top two, or 87. I don't think it needs to be 90 to get. I just think Derby, Pompey, and Bolton, who are the ones that, you know, most realistically could get to 90. I just don't think any of them look quite consistent enough. Derby and Bolton certainly just keep dropping points. Pompey's form has been really good recently, and they've shown previously in the season they can go on long stretches of lots of 1-0 wins, and they're kind of churning out very, very solid defensively. They strengthened well. They're still my favourites, but I don't think it's going to be as high a points total certainly as last season. And I think it's interesting, those numbers of kind of the quality of opposition that all of us have got to play between now and the end of the season. I think it probably will come down to how we do against Bolton and against Portsmouth, probably most importantly Bolton, because they're the ones we're competing with more directly for that second spot. On the striker issues then, Anton, you touched on it earlier, but how much do you think we did miss Collins yesterday? I felt that, you know, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang and Louis Sibley, they were definitely both not their best games and lacking quality. And I think that's fair enough, because playing in the front two isn't really their game. But I felt like they didn't really have a defined role. It felt very much like they were just kind of freestyling playing up front without... It didn't seem like they had much instruction, to be honest, or whatever they were told to do didn't seem to be doing it consistently. They weren't deliberately holding it up. They weren't often running behind. It seemed like a bit of a confused approach to it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, even James Collins' biggest critics, which I don't think any of us fall into that bucket, but even his biggest critics can probably see over the last couple of games what he brings to this side outside of just his pure goal output, because we really do miss that focal point up there, someone who can hold up play and just give us a bit of a breather and bring the wide men into play. So we have missed him in both of the last couple of games. As you say, I mean, and this is completely fair enough because we've had no time to do it, but I don't think we've really worked out how to play without James Collins, or certainly how to play without a striker yet. Because, I mean, we went straight into a couple of games in quick succession, so we haven't really had time to nail down what that looks like. I mean, we were talking on our Patreon Discord channel just after the James Collins news and after the Dwight Gale news as well. And the general consensus was, we just need to get through this next couple of weeks, really. And Barnsley was included in that. It's going to be a tough couple of weeks playing without a striker and without really a well-defined approach. But when you've got Gale and hopefully Waghorn getting up to match fitness over the next couple of weeks, I think those two between them can be enough to see us through kind of rotating those. My only concern, they've got enough quality without a doubt and give that kind of natural number nine, which allows you to play a natural striker and importantly get the wide men out wide where they're best. I mean, Mendes Lang clearly is better out wide than where he's been playing over the last couple of games. My concern is, even though you've got that quality and a bit more structure to the team, is what happens if we lose one of those two, because neither of them can play 90 minutes week in, week out like James Collins did. So we absolutely have to keep them fully fit if we're to hold out much hope. And my other slight concern is they're two very different players to James Collins. Neither of them will be kind of bullying defenders, holding up play in the same way that James Collins did. So we do need to find a slightly different approach to how we get the ball forward and also how we get the ball into the box. We're not going to be able to just send in crosses aimlessly anymore. We're going to have to be a bit more cute with it, kind of get balls in early or get it to the byline and cut it back. We've seen us do well doing that in recent times. Kane Wilson, I think, does it really well. Obviously, Sibley's goal last week was very similar to that. So we'll have to find a slightly different way of playing. Early on in the season, we played with Waghorn and Washington, so we can do it. But having had such a long period of time with James Collins as the focal point and playing in that style of play, I think it will take a couple of weeks to get used to. So get through this couple of weeks and then we'll take it from there.
Striker position has really been kind of the cursed part of this team throughout the whole season, with James Collins the only real consistent man who's available and delivering throughout the whole season. And I think, you know, I think we were already singing his praises before the injury, but certainly post-injury, as Anton says, it just reinforces how invaluable he is and how ridiculous some of the stick he was getting earlier in the season is as well. Me and Chris always think back to a day away at Peterborough where some absolute slug in front of us was just shouting dogs abuse at James Collins all game for no real good reason. I imagine he feels pretty silly right now. What do you make of the signing of Dwight Gale? Is it just purely an extra body of someone who probably can do some kind of job but isn't necessarily the perfect striker when there isn't one out there?
Yeah, I think Gale is a good signing in the circumstances. I think we didn't have too many options, did we, having not signed someone in January. He's a different type of player, isn't he, to what Collins is and even to what Waghorn and Wash are. He's often relied on his pace, but at 34, that's not going to be the same lightning pace that he's had. So we'll see as he gets into match fitness. He's played a few times in the under-21s prior to leaving Stoke. But obviously getting in with Derby and into that first team, he's going to take a bit of time. And he didn't do too much yesterday, but that wasn't his fault. It was more symptomatic of the whole team's performance. And I think it's going to take 3 or 4 games to get him to settle in. And I think we're going to have to try and ride this wave with some outstanding performances from other individuals. It's about time the likes of Barkhuizen and Sibley really, really stood up consistently.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Barkhuizen there, Tom, because I thought for a while, ever since we signed Barkhuizen, that he should have been an option in a front two down the middle. I wouldn't want to play him as a one by himself. He's certainly not a James Collins type, but he certainly has got a history of playing more centrally. And I would have thought he'd be a better option. Not that Louis Sibley's done much wrong, but I would have thought it'd be a better, more orthodox option down the middle, Anton, than Louis Sibley. What do you think about Barkhouse? Are you surprised he hasn't been more of an option playing in particularly in the front two when we're playing a 3-5-2? It seems like that's the kind of position where he could have more of an impact.
Yeah, potentially. I just don't think he's really nailed down a spot anywhere in this team. I think the thing that concerns me slightly from him playing in the front two or up front on his own would be his goal output and his finishing ability. We've seen him get into decent positions quite often in this season, and it doesn't really come of anything. So he'd be a decent option, but I certainly wouldn't want to rely on that long term, which is why I think Dwight Gayle coming in is a sensible bit of business, even if it was kind of a little bit forced.
One of the more positive bits of news, though, and we've touched a little bit on Martin Waghorn, Warne said post-game that Blackett Taylor and Martin Waghorn should be available for Tuesday night against Charlton. Obviously, not sure how likely they are to start, but obviously having those options is a positive. Corey Blackett Taylor has been a really strange one because I think we were all really excited about the signing. It felt like a statement signing. It felt like someone who's going to add real quality should, in theory, have been able to hit the ground running, having played a full part in Charlton season up until this point. But we haven't really seen anything of him so far. He obviously didn't play against Charlton. Warne explained his reasoning for that. He started the game against Exeter, but was taken off at half time, I think. And, you know, was pretty sloppy and just looked a bit off it. They seem to have said that he's, you know, had some knocks, had some niggles, and they've been treating him kind of with kid's gloves. But to be honest, I think we signed him in January to make an impact this season. So I know that the Derby County recruitment team and Paul Warne gets a lot of stick for signing players who are old and have bad injury records. And in Blackett Taylor, we went for someone that should have had neither of those problems, but we've kind of ended up in the same situation in signing someone who, for whatever reason, hasn't been available or ready to play. So Anton, it would be pretty timely, wouldn't it? It could make all the difference if we could get him on the pitch and he could start making an impact.
Yeah, I think Blackett Taylor's still got a huge part to play in this season. I think he will have a hugely positive impact once he starts getting on a bit of a run. I mean, he's obviously had a couple of niggles over the last couple of weeks, so I think it's the right approach, not rushing him into the team, or certainly not rushing him back from injury, because if we were to lose him or Mendes Lang, then that's going to be pretty devastating when you don't have a fit striker either. I mean, and that's the importance of getting either a Gayle or a Waghorn to play in those number nine spots. Because if he can get Mendes Lang and Blackett Taylor firing at the same time, it's not only going to terrify defences and create chances for the team, but they've both got goals in them. So I don't think you necessarily need a striker who's going to be scoring 10 goals between now and the end of the season, which is probably slightly unrealistically high anyway. But you don't need someone to be banging them in, because if you're chipping in with goals from the wide positions, if you've got the likes of Bird and Sibley chipping in as well, then it's more about setting up that team structure in a way that we're creating chances and scoring goals. It doesn't really matter who it comes from, does it?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. But that's an interesting point, because it takes me on to my last question, Tom, which you kind of touched on right at the end of the first half, which is about the formation. And I was going to go into it by obviously talking about the performances of Sonny Bradley in recent weeks, which I think has been a real positive. Obviously got his first goal yesterday, but to play Sonny Bradley, which I don't think should be the ultimate aim in itself, but to get Sonny Bradley in the team, which Warne seems to want to do at the moment, it needs to be, by the looks of it, in a 3-5-2, which, as I said earlier, is ironic considering we're short of strikers. Do you think, Tom, that Warne is desperate to get back to 3-5-2 no matter what, and Bradley has a big role to play? Or, as Anton said, is it probably more preferable that we have find that number nine solution, whether it's Waghorn or Gayle or a combination of both, so we can then get the most out of Nathaniel Mendes-Lang in a wide position, Corey Blackett-Taylor, Barkhouser when he comes on, yeah, Kane Wilson can play in those front three with Nyambi at right back. For me, if we have a solution to number nine, it has to be back to kind of the 4-3-3 with Adams, Bird and Harrowhead in the middle. that has served us well in recent weeks with kind of a threatening front three.
Yeah, I do agree. I think we need to, personally, I wouldn't be playing the 5-3-2. It doesn't seem to work and we don't have the players for it. And our best players are players who can play wider. Mendes Lang, as an example, I think is better out wide than drifting into the middle and causing problems, being difficult to pick up. Whereas if he plays just through the middle, he doesn't tend to drift out wide. He tends to do a lot better coming at from the wide into the central area, and we therefore need a focal point. And without a focal point, you really struggle to play in that sort of way. And that's why we're trying to play the 5-3-2, to try and have two bodies who are up there who can be a bit fluid and flexible. It's not worked massively well for us, and I've never been particularly convinced with Derby playing 5-3-2 at any point through the Paul Warne tenure so far. And I'm still not convinced by it as of yesterday. So I do think if we can get someone in the number nine position, someone fit, Waggy or Washi, either of those two can come in and play that focal man. I think they can make a real difference. But until that happens, I think Derby are going to struggle.
Okay, well, we will leave it there for this time. I think we'll be back probably after our next three games. As I said, we've got Charlton, Bristol Rovers and Port Vale. Charlton, then Port Vale, then Bristol Rovers, I think in that order. So hopefully we'll be back with you after 9 points. Still sat in second, unlikely to have caught Pompey by that time. But let's hope we're still in the top two when the next time we're with you. So Tom, all the best. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
And Anton, see you soon.
Cheers, Kutch. Let's go and watch England take a few wickets.
I hope so, because they're not taking any right now. But up the Rams.